Thus have I heard on one occasion the Blessed One was living at Sawati in Jetta's Grove, Anathan Pandika's Park. Then Mahapajapati Gotami, together with 500 bhikkhunis, went to the Blessed One. After paying homage to the Blessed One, she stood at one side and said to him, "Venerable Sir, let the Blessed One advise the bhikkhunis. Let the Blessed One instruct the bhikkhunis. Let the Blessed One give the bhikkhunis a talk on the Dhamma." Now, on that occasion, the elder bhikkhunis were taking turns in advising the bhikkhunis, but the Venerable Nandaka did not want to advise them when it was his turn. Then the Blessed One addressed the Venerable Ananda. "Ananda, whose turn is it today to advise the bhikkhunis?" "Venerable Sir, it is the Venerable Nandaka's turn to advise the bhikkhunis, but he does not want to advise them, even though it's his turn." Then the Blessed One addressed the Venerable Nandaka. "Advise the bhikkhunis, Nandaka. Instruct the bhikkhunis, Nandaka. Give the bhikkhunis a talk on the Dhamma." "Yes, Venerable Sir," the Venerable Nandaka replied. Now, the reason he didn't want to give the bhikkhunis a talk on the Dhamma was, in a recent past lifetime, he was a king, and he had these concubines. And they turned out to be these bhikkhunis in this lifetime. And he thought that if he gave them a talk on the Dhamma, then they were going to fall in love with him again, and he would be criticized by other sects. "Yes, Venerable Sir," the Venerable Nandaka replied. Then in the morning, the Venerable Nandaka dressed, taking his bowl and outer robe, went into Sawati for alms. When he'd wandered for alms in Sawati and had returned from his alms round, after his meal, he went to a companion to the Rajaka Park. The bhikkhunis saw the Venerable Nandaka coming in the distance and prepared a seat and set out water for the feet. And the Venerable Nandaka sat down on a seat made ready and washed his feet. The bhikkhunis paid homage to him and sat down at one side. When they were seated, the Venerable Nandaka told the bhikkhunis, Sisters, I will be, this talk will be in the form of questions. When you understand, you should say, "We understand." When you do not understand, you should say, "We do not understand." When you're doubtful or perplexed, you should ask me, "How is this, Venerable Sir? What is the meaning of this?" Venerable Sir, we're satisfied and pleased with the Master Nandaka in that he invites us even with this much. Sisters, what do you think? Is the eye permanent or impermanent? Impermanent, Venerable Sir. Is what is impermanent, suffering or happiness? Suffering, Venerable Sir. Is what is impermanent, suffering and subject to change, fit to be regarded thus? This is mine, this I am, this is myself? No, Venerable Sir. Sisters, what do you think? Is the ear permanent or impermanent? Impermanent, venerable sir. Is what is impermanent suffering or happiness? Suffering, venerable sir. Is what is impermanent suffering and subject to change, fit to be regarded thus? This is mine, this I am, this is myself. No, venerable sir. Is the nose permanent or impermanent? Impermanent, venerable sir. Is what is impermanent suffering or happiness? Suffering, venerable sir. Is what is impermanent suffering and subject to change to be regarded thus? This is mine, this I am, this is myself. No, venerable sir. Is the tongue permanent or impermanent? Impermanent, venerable sir. Is what is impermanent suffering or happiness? Suffering, venerable sir. Is what is impermanent suffering and subject to change fit to be regarded thus? This is mine, this I am, this is myself. No, venerable sir. Is the body permanent or impermanent? Impermanent, venerable sir. Is what is impermanent suffering or happiness? Suffering, venerable sir. Is what is impermanent suffering and subject to change fit to be regarded thus? This is mine, this I am, this is myself. No, venerable sir. Is the mind perfect, permanent or impermanent? Impermanent, venerable sir. What is impermanent suffering and subject, happiness or suffering? Suffering, venerable sir. Is what is impermanent suffering and subject to change fit to be regarded thus? This is mine, this I am, this is myself. No, venerable sir. Why is that? Because, venerable sir, we have already seen this well as it actually is with proper wisdom thus. These six internal bases are impermanent. Good, good sisters. So it is with a noble disciple who knows this as it actually is with proper wisdom. Sisters, what do you think? Are forms permanent or impermanent? Impermanent, venerable sir. Is what is impermanent suffering or happiness? Suffering, venerable sir. Is what is impermanent suffering and subject to change fit to be regarded thus? This is mine, this I am, this is myself. No, venerable sir. Are sounds permanent or impermanent? Impermanent, venerable sir. Is what is impermanent subject suffering or happiness? Suffering, venerable sir. Is what is impermanent suffering and subject to change fit to be regarded thus? This is mine, this I am, this is myself. No, venerable sir. Are odors permanent or impermanent? Impermanent, venerable sir. Is what is impermanent suffering or happiness? Suffering, venerable sir. Is what is what is impermanent suffering and subject to change fit to be regarded thus? This is mine, this I am, this is myself. No, venerable sir. Are flavors permanent or impermanent? Impermanent, venerable sir. is what is impermanent suffering or happiness. Suffering, Venerable Sir, is what is impermanent suffering and subject to change, fit to be regarded thus. This is mine, this I am, this is myself. No, Venerable Sir, are tangibles permanent or impermanent? Impermanent, Venerable Sir, is what is impermanent suffering or happiness? Suffering, Venerable Sir, is what is impermanent suffering and subject to change, fit to be regarded thus. This is mine, this I am, this is myself. No, Venerable Sir, are mind objects permanent or impermanent? Impermanent, Venerable Sir, is what is impermanent suffering or happiness? Suffering, Venerable Sir, is what is impermanent suffering and subject to change, fit to be regarded thus. This is mine, this I am, this is myself. No, Venerable Sir. Why is that? Because, Venerable Sir, we have already seen this well, as it actually is with proper wisdom, thus. These six external bases are impermanent. Good, good, sisters. So it is with a noble disciple who sees this as it actually is with proper wisdom. Sisters, what do you think? Is I consciousness permanent or impermanent? Impermanent, Venerable Sir. Is what is impermanent suffering or happiness? Suffering, Venerable Sir. Is what is impermanent suffering and subject to change, fit to be regarded thus? This is mine, this I am, this is myself. No, Venerable Sir. Is ear consciousness permanent or impermanent? Impermanent, Venerable Sir. Is what is impermanent suffering or happiness? Suffering, Venerable Sir. Is what is impermanent suffering and subject to change, fit to be regarded thus? This is mine, this I am, this is myself. No, Venerable Sir. Is nose consciousness permanent or impermanent? Excuse me. Impermanent, Venerable Sir. Is what is impermanent suffering or happiness? Suffering, Venerable Sir. Is what is impermanent suffering and subject to change, fit to be regarded thus? This is mine, this I am, this is myself. No, Venerable Sir, why is that? Because, Venerable Sir, we have already seen as it actually is with proper wisdom, thus. These six bases, these six classes of consciousness as they truly are. Good, sister, good. So it is with a noble disciple who sees this as it actually is with proper wisdom. Sisters, suppose an oil lamp is burning. Its oil is impermanent, subject to change. Its wick is impermanent, subject to change. Its flame is impermanent, subject to change. And its radiance is impermanent, subject to change. Now, would anyone be speaking rightly who spoke thus? While the oil lamp is burning, its oil, wick, and flame are impermanent and subject to change, but its radiance is permanent, everlasting, eternal, not subject to change. No, Venerable Sir, why is that? Because, Venerable Sir, while the oil lamp is burning, its oil, wick, and flame are impermanent and subject to change. So its radiance must be impermanent and subject to change. So too, sisters, would anyone be speaking rightly who spoke thus? These six internal bases are impermanent and subject to change, but the pleasant, painful, and neither pleasant nor painful feeling that one experiences in dependence on these six internal bases is permanent. You think it sometimes. Everlasting, eternal, not subject to change. No, Venerable Sir, why is that? Because each feeling arises in dependence on its corresponding condition. And with the cessation of that corresponding condition, the feeling ceases. Good, good, sister, so it is with the noble disciple who sees this as it actually is with proper wisdom. Sister, suppose a great tree standing possessed of heartwood. Its roots is impermanent, subject to change. Its trunk is impermanent, subject to change. Its branches and foliage are impermanent, subject to change. And its shadow is impermanent, subject to change. Now, would anyone be speaking rightly who spoke thus? The root, the trunk, the branches and foliage of this great tree standing possessed of heartwood are impermanent and subject to change. But its shadow is permanent, everlasting, eternal, not subject to change. No, Venerable Sir. Why is that? Because, Venerable Sir, the root, trunk, branches, and foliage of this great tree standing, possessed of heartwood, are impermanent and subject to change. So its shadow must be impermanent and subject to change. So too, sisters, would anyone be speaking rightly who spoke thus? These six external bases are impermanent and subject to change, but the pleasant nor painful feeling that one experiences in dependence on these six external bases is permanent, everlasting, eternal, not subject to change. Now, this is a real interesting thing because he's also referring to a permanent God. So it's something to consider. There's one of the key things that all people that believe in a God, he's everlasting, is always going to be the same. But how is that possible? When nothing in the universe is everlasting and is changing all the time. Okay. No, Venerable Sir, why is why is that? Because each feeling arises in dependence upon its corresponding condition. And with the cessation of its corresponding condition, feeling ceases. Good, good sisters, so it is with a noble disciple who sees this as it actually is with proper wisdom. Sisters, suppose a skilled butcher or his apprentice were to kill a cow and carve it up with a sharp butcher's knife without damaging the inner mass of flesh and without damaging the outer hide. He would cut, sever, and carve away the inner tendons, the sinews, and ligaments with the sharp butcher's knife. Having cut, severed, and carved all this away, he would remove the outer hide and cover the cow again with that same hide. Would he be speaking rightly if he were to say this cow is joined to its hide, just as it was before? No, venerable sir. Why is that? Because if a skilled butcher or his apprentice were to kill a cow and cut and sever and carve it all away, even though he covers the cow again with that same hide, the cow is, and says this cow is joined to its hide just as it was before, that cow would still be disjoined from that hide. Sisters, I have given you a simile in order to convey a meaning. This is the meaning. The inner mass of flesh is a term for the six internal bases. The outer hide is a term for the six external bases. The inner tendons, sinews, and ligaments is a term for delight and lust. The sharp butcher's knife is a term for noble wisdom. Noble wisdom that cuts, severs, and carves away the inner defilements, fetters, and bonds. Sisters, there are these seven awakening factors, through the development and cultivation of which a monk, by realizing for himself with direct knowledge here and now, enters upon and abides in the deliverance of mind and deliverance by wisdom that are taintless with the destruction of the taints. What are the seven? Here, sister, a monk develops a mindfulness awakening factor, which is supported by seclusion, dispassion, and cessation, and ripens in relinquishment. He develops the investigation of your experience, awakening factor. It's going to go do the same thing again. Okay. Which is supported by seclusion, dispassion, and cessation, and ripens in relinquishment. He develops the energy awakening factor, which is developed by seclusion, dispassion, cessation, and ripens in relinquishment. He develops the joy awakening factor, which is developed by seclusion, dispassion, and cessation, and ripens in relinquishment. He develops the tranquility awakening factor, which is developed by seclusion, dispassion, cessation, and ripens in relinquishment. He develops the collectedness awakening factor, which is developed through seclusion, dispassion, and cessation, and ripens in relinquishment. He develops the equanimity awakening factor. Now, these seven factors, when they are in perfect balance, is when you attain Nibbana. And the awakening factors are used in a lot of different ways. When you have sloth and torpor, then you want to bring up the awakening factor of investigation, energy, and joy. Whoa, isn't that something? How does sloth and torpor arise? What happens first? What happens after that? What happens after that? That's how you investigate. Now, a lot of people have told me, but I'm already sleepy. Why do I have to have the relaxed step? Because you're not truly sleepy, you're dull. That's what torpor really is. You develop it after the torpor gets so bad that it turns into sleepiness. But how does it arise? Take an interest in how it arises. What happens first? When you're doing that, you are also experiencing an increase in energy because your interest gets piqued. How does this happen? What happens first? So when your mind is dulled out, investigate it. See what's happening. Now, when your mind starts to get real excited or agitated, then you don't use the investigation and energy, and joy will come when you finally let it go. If you try to do that, you're going to not be successful in overcoming the restlessness. You have to bring up the awakening factor of tranquility, the awakening factor of stillness, or the awakening factor of equanimity. That's what you use when you're excited. And a lot of people, they'll get to a certain level and certain depth of their meditation, and their mind thinks a lot. And they start to get involved with the thinking, and they start to become frustrated because their mind is so caught up in thinking and is so distracting that they come to me and complain. Now, I had a monk here last year. He was pretty successful at the start of his meditation. And then he would get into neither perception nor non-perception or nothingness. I'm not sure which it was. And all of a sudden his mind would start pushing. He wanted to get another attainment. I want this. Now, every day he would come in and he would complain about having a thoughtful, overthoughty mind. A mind that had continual thoughts. Back off on your energy. Don't try so hard. And I reminded him about every day that he was wanting something to happen. That desire is going to stop it from happening, and you're going to get restless. That's just the way it works. That's the natural unfolding of this process. So every day I told him, sit down with the determination, I don't care what happens next. But every day he would come back in the interview and tell me about how restless his mind was. So I told him to stop doing that over and over for a month. Just let those thoughts be. They're nothing. Let them go. Just stay with your object of meditation. After a month, he came in to the interview and his face was all radiant and he was so happy. He said, "I just figured out that I was trying too hard." Now, this is after a month of me tearing my hair out to get him to stop, of my telling him over and over and over again, let go of your desire for something to happen. And he said, "Well, I do it every day. I tell myself every day," but he didn't believe it. Secretly, he wanted it to happen. So he had a month of suffering because of not paying attention to the instructions and following them. Because he had this secret desire, "I want to be an arahat." Okay. But an arahat doesn't want to be an arahat, that just happens when the conditions are right. So these awakening factors, when you're restless, bring up a feeling of tranquility. And your mind will quiet down fairly quickly. But if you have a secret desire for something to happen in the way you want it to, guess what? The awakening factors won't work because of that desire. "I want it to stop. I want it to go away. I hate when this kind of thing happens." Well, let go of that. It's not yours anyway. Why are you trying to control it? Is this me? Is this mine? Is this who I am? No. It's just a feeling. And when the feeling will cease on its own when the conditions are right for it to cease. So it's a real important aspect of the teaching to understand that you have to let go of everything. Everything is impermanent. Everything is kind of a suffering that arises. And it's not yours anyway. So why get involved with it? Realize that all of this stuff is just part of the way things are right now. Everything is impermanent. Everything is a kind of unsatisfactoriness. It doesn't matter whether it's a painful feeling or a pleasant feeling. You treat them both in the same way. You allow them to be without taking them personally. This is just part of a show. It's part of a process. Don't get involved with it. One of the biggest problems that most meditators have is they're afraid to let go. They want to be in control. Okay, well, you can be in control by letting go of the want to be in control. By bringing up a feeling of tranquility or equanimity with a meditation pain, when it comes up, the best way to allow that to be is just by allowing it to be there by itself. Don't keep your attention on it. Don't get caught in your thoughts about it. Just let it be there by itself. It will fade away on its own. Okay. These are the seven awakening factors, through the development and cultivation of which a monk, by realizing for himself with direct knowledge, here and now enters and abides in the deliverance of mind and deliverance by wisdom that are taintless with the destruction of the taints. When the Venerable Nandaka had advised the bhikkhunis thus, he dismissed them, saying, "Go, sister, it is time." When the bhikkhunis have delighted and rejoiced in the Venerable Nandaka's words, rose from their seats, after paying homage to the Venerable Nandaka, departed, keeping him on their right. This is a statement that Bhikkhu Bodhi uses a lot. It doesn't mean that they went by him on the right-hand side and then kept what he's saying in the right way. They went to the Blessed One. After paying homage to him, stood at one side. The Blessed One told them, "Go, sisters, it is time." When the bhikkhunis paid homage to the Blessed One and departed, keeping him on the right, soon after they had left, the Blessed One addressed the bhikkhus, "Monk, just as on this Upasada day of the 14th, people are not doubtful or perplexed as to whether the moon is incomplete or full. Since the moon is clearly incomplete, so too these bhikkhunis are satisfied with Nandaka's teaching in the Dhamma, but their intentions have not been fulfilled." Then the Blessed One addressed the Venerable Nandaka, "Well then, Nandaka, tomorrow you should advise these bhikkhunis in exactly the same way again." "Yes, Venerable Sir," the Venerable Nandaka replied. Then the next morning, the Venerable Nandaka dressed and he went out on his alms round. Then the bhikkhunis paid homage to the Blessed One and departed. They just went through the same thing, which I'm not going to do to you. You have enough for right now. Soon after they left, the Blessed One addressed the monks, "Monk, just as on the Upasada day of the 15th, people are not doubtful or perplexed as to whether the moon is incomplete or full. Since the moon is clearly full, so too those bhikkhunis are satisfied with Nandaka's teaching, the Dhamma, and their intention has been fulfilled. Bhikkhus, even the least advanced of those 500 bhikkhunis is a stream enterer, no longer subject to perdition, bound for deliverance, headed for awakening." That is what the Blessed One said. The monks were satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. So this is actually a very powerful sutta. And I think we should probably make a thing, doing the whole thing and then doing it all again, following the way the sutta was supposed to be, so that you can listen to it. It's real easy to get caught up in "this is me, this is mine, this is myself." But when you hear it over and over again, is it permanent or impermanent? Is it suffering or happiness? Is what is suffering me? Is it mine? Is it myself? And hearing that is a good reminder, so that when you're sitting in meditation and you start getting caught up in something, bring this up. bring up the fact that there, it doesn't matter whether it's with the eyes, the ears, or the mind. It doesn't matter. It's all impermanent. It's all subject to change. Everything that's subject to change is dukkha. And you get to see this as it actually is. This isn't mine. I didn't ask this stuff to come up. So keep reminding yourself of that. And the more you become familiar with it, the easier it is to not get involved with the rubbish thoughts, the ones that are saying, well, this is mine, this is my feeling, this is absolutely me. Well, but it's not. And the more you can remind yourself of that, the easier the meditation becomes. The easier it becomes to use the six R's lightly, not as a stick to beat things away. You use the six R's only to let go of the craving. And your mind will start to get more and more clear as you do this. Now, there's going to be times you forget. Okay. So you forgot. So what? Start again. That's why I say turn this into a game. It's just your mind going off being crazy about one thing or another. That's fine. There's no problem with that. Just let it be. Relax into it. It's doing its own silly little thing. And it's not yours. You don't ask it to come up. You can't control it while it's there. So why fight with the truth? Allow the truth to be. There's an acronym I like to use. It's don't resist or push anything. Physical pain, don't resist it. Don't try to push it away. Mental pain, don't resist it. Don't try to push it away. Soften your mind and smile. Drops. Let your mind be like water. Just go around this stuff. Yeah, it's there, and yeah, it stops the water from flowing down straight, but the water doesn't resist or get upset. Just allow it to be. Okay, so the more you can realize this, the more you can develop that mind that doesn't get caught up in fear and anxiety and sadness and depression. The more you see it as it actually is, and let your mind be like water going around an obstacle, you're developing your equanimity. And when your equanimity starts to get strong, it turns to disenchantment. And disenchantment is a finer degree of equanimity. So, please, have fun. Laugh with the craziness of your mind. There I go again. Think my mind would get tired of coming back to the same stuff. But laugh with it. Keep your mind light. That's your job. Keep your mind light and relaxed. Okay. Do you have any questions? Everybody knows this stuff so well that you don't need to ask questions, huh?
So when we're doing forgiveness and we let go of an attachment and then joy arises, that's strengthening that.
Of course.
Awakening factor that familiarizes us more with that feeling.
Right.
And bring it away.
That's when I ask if you feel relief. That's what I'm looking for. But don't just believe your mind when it says, I don't need to do this anymore. Keep doing it for a while and see if anything else comes up. But eventually, you can go back to doing the six directions. And you can always write. You see what happens when people write to David. He gives me the email and I read it and then we discuss. So I do get to see all of these things. I'm really being serious when I say I want you to have fun. So, any other question?
What were the factors you bring up at this sloth and torpor?
Investigation and energy. And the way you do that is by taking more interest in how it arises. Why it's there, we don't care. How does it arise? Investigation is very important. So keep on sitting. Okay, let's share some merit. May suffering ones be suffering free and the fear struck fearless be. May the grieving shed all grief and may all beings find relief. May all beings share this merit that we've thus acquired for the acquisition of all kinds of happiness. May beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty powers, share this merit of ours. May they long protect the Buddhist dispensation. Sadhu, sadhu.